Good morning. Let's take this time together. Wherever you are physically, as you hear my voice and join with us, allow your body to rest in a comfortable position. Be aware that in this season of rain and wind, that we are warm and comfortable. We have somewhere indoors to rest and feel gratitude for that. As we take each breath, the meditation today is to rekindle the warmth and the light in our hearts. It is as if the inner hearth of our hearts always has some flame. But we are noticing that perhaps the flame of love within our hearts has been allowed to flicker. And to become less active. And so we use this time, breath by breath, to feed that hearth. To bring in the light of God, breath by breath. That light recognizing itself in our hearts. Our hearts recognizing that light, which we are one with. And we kindle the flame within, breath by breath, so that we recognize, we recognize our connection with God, with Christ, with love and with light, no matter how dark it is without. Within there is light, and there is a love that we can share. Let us take some breaths together, focusing in on that inner hearth of the heart, that beautiful light within. May we take this experience of inward light outward into our daily lives so that we may be more gentle and kind and giving in this spirit of giving that is embodied in this season. May we know this love together, and may we see this light in one another. Amen.
always been within, within, within. I look at you, you look at me.
Well, good morning. We're so grateful to be here, and we're grateful to the patron saint of the internet, whomever that may be, for allowing us to join in this way today. Although, why are they always patron saints? Shouldn't they be matron saints as well? Shouldn't we recognize all genders as saintly? The days are getting darker. The hours of light decrease day by day. That may seem like a discouraging or discouraged comment, but it's simply an astronomical truth. Due to the Earth's orbital geometry, we shift from light to dark and back again every year. And as we cycle through light and shadow, it surely affects not just the weather, but our psyches. Seasonal affective disorder, the blues and black moods contrast with sunlit days, a rosy outlook or a sunny disposition. This season of darkness precedes our celebration of Jesus' birth as Christmas. Of course, December 25th is not recorded as the date of the birth of Jesus in the gospel accounts. This date was selected in the 4th century by Pope, can you guess? Everyone at home, send in your answers. Julius I. And most scholars agree that the Christmas holiday was sort of grafted on to the traditional pagan celebrations of winter solstice, marking the longest night of the year and thus the beginning of the return to days of more and more light. This grafting on we see in many traditions throughout the Christmas season, and we'll sing a carol together later, the holly and the ivy, that was originally a pagan carol about these plants and now is embedded with Christian symbolism. Now, I'm sure we all remember Christmas as the day we looked forward to the most when we were kids, because that's when we would get all the loot. We had that focus, didn't we, of what will I get and what do I want and am I going to get it? At least I'm pretty sure that most of us were wired that way as children. I sometimes think that Sally, even as a kid, and I'll probably include Cindy in this too, must have been focused on making sure that everyone else was taken care of, because that's how I've seen both of them operate over and over. But the rest of us, probably not. And I think some folks stay in that acquisitive mindset of childhood, maybe for their whole lives. We all see many examples of that, I know. I also know, certainly, that we experience a rush, a flood of dopamine, the rewarding brain chemical, when we go out and acquire something new for ourselves, when we practice retail therapy. Science tells us that. In fact, just recently I heard a client in a group I lead talking about his Christmas shopping. And then he elaborated by telling us what he was going to buy for himself. Now, long before there were malls and online sales, before there was holiday shopping and doorbuster discounts, a guy in Palestine talked to some people, and some of what he said while standing on a small hill has come down to us like this. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What is it we should treasure, that which defines the location of the heart? I'm sure we realize whether we have a fat portfolio and no worries at all about finances, or whether our income is tiny and we have to be oh so careful, that those who have joined today in this service are all materially wealthy beyond the dreams of the vast majority of our fellow humans worldwide. According to the Red Cross, if you have a little money in the bank and in your wallet or purse and spare change in a dish somewhere, then you are among the top 8% of the world's wealthy. As to storing up treasures in heaven, I don't fully know what that means to most people. The traditional view that we'll have pie in the sky by and by when we die is not one I hold and does not reflect unity principles. In Charles Fillmore's words, heaven is a state of consciousness in which the soul and body are in harmony with divine mind. A state of consciousness in which the soul and body are in harmony with divine mind. So when we are focused on spirit, when we are in harmony with God, then we'll find that our hearts are aligned with that treasure, with the God of love that we see as the fundamental reality in our lives. In that state, our treasure is in heaven, for we are. Then we don't gauge the value of our life by our bank account, our appraised value of our home, or how much is piled up for us under the Christmas tree. None of these contribute to that state of consciousness that we seek. Now, this guy in Palestine talking on that hill didn't end what he was saying with the comments about treasure, as great as those are. He went right on and said this: the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? These verses I have found somewhat confusing, and that made me want to read and think about them. What is being said here? Verses like this are ever subject to interpretation, but what I've come to is this: how we look at things, our view of the world, is the key to whether we are filled with light or darkness, psychologically. If we have a healthy outlook, if your eyes are healthy, as Jesus said, we will see light and love in the world we encounter, and we will participate in that light and love. But if our vision itself is dark and clouded through greed, through resentment, through unhealed and unresolved hurts in our lives, through a focus on ourselves and what we want, then we will see and experience darkness. Now, why does this sound sort of familiar? Oh, yeah. Unity principle number 3. Thoughts create experiences. We create our life experiences through our way of thinking. On Thanksgiving, I was trying my best to focus on gratitude. Because if you're not going to do it that day, you're really missing the boat, right? And I was having mixed results, I'll confess. Then I started listening to a radio show focused on gratefulness and heard Imam Khalid Latif, the university chaplain for New York University, who said to the host, "You want to choose gratitude as a vision modifier, so it helps you see what's there as opposed to chasing what's not there, enabling you to find that much more meaning and contentment through appreciation as a vehicle. Choose gratitude as a vision modifier, because we create our life experiences through our way of thinking. Find meaning, find contentment through appreciation as a vehicle to take you there. How we look at the world changes the world we look at. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light." Finally, I want to bring you 3 more sentences from that Palestine guy speaking on the hill long ago, because I think these really help tie it all together. He said, "No one can serve 2 masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Now, this can seem tricky for us householders because we have not taken vows of poverty and do not walk around with a blanket and a begging bowl only. But the Palestine Hill guy doesn't say, have nothing to do with money. He says, don't relate to money as the treasure you put your trust in. To do so would take your focus off spirit, and it is spiritual energy we must invest with our trust. We cannot focus on both. We must choose which to concentrate on. We can't serve two masters. I've run process groups for years, and there is always that moment when someone in the group picks up a book or starts looking at their phone, when we're all supposed to be present and talking about our feelings and listening to one another. And so I ask that person to put down the book, the phone, the distraction, and they say, oh, I'm multitasking. Okay, except that no one really multitasks. Studies show that when people try to do two cognitively demanding things at the same time, they're really task switching, shifting rapidly from one thing to the other. And the brain kind of reboots a little bit each time, resulting in cognitive errors and difficulties in remembering the context of each separate activity or in recalling details from each task. We don't really multitask because we can't actually serve two masters, as Jesus put it. You can't be focused on God and living your life as a sacred trust at the same time you are obsessing over whether your needs are met. The first is living in a sacred way. The second, in an anagram of those same letters, is living in a scared way. The first is love, the second is fear. And as Gerald Jampolsky taught us a generation ago, love is letting go of fear. They are two masters you cannot serve at the same time. During the Korean War, there was a private first class named Bruce Ritter who found himself having to choose between two masters. PFC Ritter was a young man, 23 years old, about 6 feet tall, weighing maybe 140 pounds. His job was to carry a radio all day long, and I imagine that at his height and with his slender build, he looked a little bit like an antenna. They would say that the radios they carried then weighed about 38 pounds in the morning and around 60 pounds at the end of the day. So it was a hard job. But worse than that, there came a terrible battle in the war when PFC Ritter's unit was enveloped and decimated by Chinese troops. And he found himself with a group of survivors, and together they looked for a chance to escape, if they could, through the Chinese lines. Among Ritter's companions was another young soldier, Willard Smith, who had an injured leg and could no longer walk. Ritter and three others arranged Smith on a blanket and each took a corner, and they found they could carry Smith, though awkwardly. Picture this, they didn't even have time to make a rude frame from blankets. They were in such a hurry. So picture holding one quarter of the weight of one of your fellow soldiers just by holding a corner of a blanket. There was one officer with this small band, a lieutenant, who was less commanding the others than just tagging along. But when the group got down a hill and came to the junction of two streams, the lieutenant said, "We'll leave Smith here. We can send a helicopter for him." Ritter faced a crisis of conscience. He felt the lieutenant's order was just a lie, that no one would ever come back for Smith. And he couldn't hold back. After a long moment, he finally spoke up to his superior, saying, "You're just going to leave him here to die, aren't you?" The lieutenant didn't really answer him, perhaps out of shame. And Ritter and the others carrying Smith, all enlisted men, huddled together, deciding they would just keep bearing their injured companion on the makeshift stretcher, no matter what the officer said. It turns out the lieutenant simply left the ad hoc group some time after that, and in fact, he was never seen again and was presumed killed or captured. Miraculously, Ritter and the others somehow got away from the Chinese troops that were surrounding them. They found their way to a MASH unit, and they all made it out of the war alive. I think this story illustrates how you truly cannot serve two masters, and how sometimes those decisions are hard to make. The lieutenant's wish to leave Smith behind is really understandable. All of us want to survive, and we seek to avoid pain and physical harm and death. In terms of pure rationality, leaving a wounded companion behind would enhance one's own chance of survival. Yet, that treasure a person trusts in most, our own precious lives, is one master. The other is God and the principles of love, compassion, selflessness. Each chose which master they would follow on that cold Korean day some 70 years ago. You could not choose both. And neither can we take both paths simultaneously. We must choose one or the other, compassion or greed, God or self, heavenly treasures or earthly ones, light or darkness. Each day we are given the gifts of life and of free will, the best Christmas gifts we can ever receive. And each day we get to choose what to value, how we look at things, and what are our guiding principles, which is how I summarize those three blocks of scripture: what we value, how we look at things, and what principles are we going to be guided by, what master we choose to serve. As I've thought about these things, I've remembered many people whom I have loved and who embodied love and manifested light in my life, people whose earthly journeys have concluded. I'm sure we all have these beacons of love in our thoughts, those loved ones we miss. I've realized that those people were a gift from our Creator, that they were the light bringers that they were to us because they had found that light within and had made that radiance visible to all. In this Advent season, as we await the turning of the tide toward light, as we beckon the coming of the Christ child, I find myself feeling more and more pulled toward that light and toward being a light bearer for others. Not because of some special merit that I've manifested, for I've made boodles of mistakes. And I've created problems galore in the years of my life. But because I have been showered with love and light and grace by so many beautiful souls, and they have shown me we all carry that light within, and that I too can bring forth that light to illuminate a pathway or a moment for others I meet. The light manifests for us this time of year in Christmas lights, in the Advent candle, the Yule log. It was revealed long ago as the Star of Bethlehem, marking Jesus' birthplace for the three wise men. But most of all, that light shows in each of you, my friends, in your eyes, in your smiles, in your spirits shining through whatever troubles you have met along the way. We are called to be the light. We've been shown the light by those who've inspired us, and now we are summoned, if we have ears to hear, to realize that light within ourselves and offer that radiance to this world, to be candles in the darkness, and to let the Christ child be born in each of our hearts this Christmas season. Jesus was made flesh and brought his teachings to the world so that we too can find and share the treasures of love, of vision, and of service. He said, "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. In the same way, let your light shine before others." Let that light of God that you bear be your gift to those you love this Christmas season. Let that light and love radiate far and wide, announcing the good news of the Christ child in the hearts of all.